From VOA, the Science Edition of Press Conference USA. Here's your host, Rick Pantaleo.
Welcome to the Science Edition of Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. I'm Rick Pantaleo. In 1931, a Belgian cosmologist and Catholic priest named Georges Lemaître published a paper that proposed the beginning and subsequent rapid expansion of what is called the observable universe. It theoretically began with the cataclysmal explosion of a single atomic particle at a single point in time. Scientists have calculated that the universe began some 13.8 billion years ago. The groundwork for this hypothesis was laid in 1915 when Albert Einstein published his theory of general relativity. This premise has become popularly known as the Big Bang Theory. It was facetiously given that name by the English astronomer and astrophysicist Sir Fred Hoyle during a radio lecture. The thing is, Sir Fred Hoyle never accepted the theory as the origin of the universe. The Big Bang Theory within the scientific community is now considered the predominant model for explaining the beginning of the universe and all it contains. Edwin Hubble, the scientist for whom a NASA space telescope is named, published Hubble's Law, also called Hubble-Lemaître Law, which proposes that the universe continues to expand. In recent years, scientists have won Nobel Prizes for their work in calculating the velocity of this expansion. Over the years, since the theory was first proposed, scientists and lay people alike often question what happened before the Big Bang even took place. Some cosmologists, like today's guest, still have many questions about the original concept of the Big Bang theory, including what occurred fractions of a second before the explosive birth of the universe. My guest for today's show is William Will Kinney. He is a professor of physics at the University at Buffalo College of Arts and Sciences in Buffalo, New York. Professor Kinney is also the author of a newly released book that explores the origins of the cosmos called An Infinity of Worlds, Cosmic Inflation and the Beginning of the Universe. Will, did the universe have an actual start date?
Yes. This is one of the sort of most profound results of cosmology in the 20th century, is the realization that the universe had a beginning. And in the 21st century, now with the advent of modern precision cosmology, lots of this exciting new science that the community is doing, we've actually managed to measure the age of the universe, our universe anyway, really accurately. So we know that the universe began in a very hot, very dense initial state about 13.8 billion years ago. And the sort of measurement uncertainty in that is about 200 million years. So we're measuring it to the age of the universe to within a few percent.
So how is that determined? How is the age of the universe determined?
Well, simply put, the way we measure the age of the universe is by measuring how fast it's expanding, right? So we can measure when we look out at galaxies in the distant universe, we notice that they're all moving away from us. And they're all moving away from us with a velocity that's proportional to their distance. So the further away something is, the faster it's moving away. So that expansion rate tells us how fast the universe is getting bigger. And if we know what the universe is made of, and we have determined this, at least in a general sense, that the universe is made up of normal stuff like hydrogen and helium, some mysterious stuff called dark matter that we don't really understand, but we can detect it indirectly, and some even weirder stuff called dark energy. If you put that whole cosmic cocktail together, along with the expansion rate that we measure, you can figure out exactly how old the universe was. You can run the clock backward and determine this initial age of the cosmos.
From what I understand, from what I remember, that 80% of all matter in the universe is dark energy.
About 70 to 75, yes.
Your new book, An Infinity of Worlds, you propose that before what we call the Big Bang took place, the universe underwent a cosmic expansion and doubled in size at least 80 times in a fraction of a second. Are you saying that the Big Bang itself didn't birth the universe, but the universe started growing before the explosive event took place? Could you explain that?
Well, in a way, the theory of cosmic inflation is a theory of what happened before the Big Bang. So that moment of the Big Bang, this hot, dense initial state of the universe, happened 13.8 billion years ago. But the question is, where did that come from? what set the initial conditions for the universe. And those initial conditions are very specific. The universe has to be really smooth. It has to be really big. It has to be really close to geometrically flat. Sort of the way that when you look at the Earth, the Earth locally looks flat to you because we're so much smaller than the planet. The universe as a whole looks flat to us as well. And none of these things are explained by sort of the standard Big Bang cosmology. Inflation is a theory that rectifies these deficiencies and creates a, it's a theory for what really happened before this moment, 13.8 billion years ago, where our universe came into existence.
And you were talking about expansion of the universe as far as measuring when the Big Bang took place. And as I'm sure you know, famed scientist Edwin Hubble proposed that the universe continues to expand. And others since then have said that the universe is expanding at a rapid rate. And some scientists have also calculated how fast the universe is expanding. Can you talk about this concept, how it was determined, how we know it's taking place at such a rapid rate, and how are scientists able to actually calculate the rate of expansion?
The way you calculate the rate of expansion is straightforward in principle. It's complicated in practice. And so what you need to do is you need to be able to look out at a distant galaxy, or preferably a whole lot of them, and first of all, measure how far away that thing is. And that's the hard part, because measuring distances to things in astronomy is really difficult. You can't stretch a ruler out. You have to use indirect methods. And so you measure how far, if you can measure how far away, say, a distant galaxy is, and then measure how fast it's moving away from us, that gives you a measure of the rate of the expansion of the universe. So the hard part is measuring how far away things are. And in particular, these measurements that have shown that the expansion of the universe is not slowing down as one might have expected, but is actually speeding up. We typically use very, very bright supernovae. So these are exploding stars that are so bright that you can see them most of the way across the observable universe at a distance of billions or tens of billions of light years. And these are what are called standard candles. They're objects whose brightness you know. So if you look at how bright it appears to be, you can infer the distance to that thing. It's sort of like if you have a 100-watt light bulb, and you look at how bright, you can tell how far away that 100-watt light bulb is by how bright it appears to be to your eye at a distance. This is the idea of a standard candle. And we can do the same thing with supernovae, which are, of course, a whole lot brighter than 100-watt light bulbs.
I'm trying to wrap my head around what you describe as cosmic expansion. I mean, we're all taught that the universe began with the Big Bang, this sudden explosion out of nowhere. And again, a lot of people think, you know, what did happen before the Big Bang took place? Can you tell us a little bit more about what precipitated the Big Bang?
A common misconception, I think, that people have about the Big Bang is that it was like an explosion. Right? That you had some sort of primordial seed that blew up and threw things off in every direction. And the reality is nothing like that. In fact, a better way to think of the Big Bang is that it's a boundary in time, not a point in space. And at that boundary in time, this 13.8 billion years ago, an infinitely large universe sprang into existence all at once. The Big Bang happened everywhere in an infinitely large space at the same time. This is a little hard to get your head around, I know. And the question is, what set those initial conditions? Why did this huge infinite space pop into existence at all? And this is where inflation comes in. So the idea of cosmic inflation is that before this hot, dense initial state of this infinite universe coming into existence, there was a period of expansion. So the universe was also expanding before this, but it was of a very different character. For one thing, instead of being hot and dense, it was cold and empty, and it was filled with nothing except the energy of empty space itself. And that energy of empty space drove an expansion so rapid that everything we see, our entire observable universe, which is everything we see and everything we ever will be able to see, stretched from about the size of a grapefruit to the size of the universe today in a trillionth of a trillionth of a trillionth of a second. So it's truly amazingly rapid expansion of this tiny initial state into the large universe that we happen to live in.
Will, you talk about something called cosmic horizons in your book. Can you give us an easy to understand overview of what this is?
Well, just like on the surface of the Earth, if you look out, you can only see a certain distance because the Earth's surface curves away from you. So you see yourself being at the center of a circular horizon. Similarly, in the cosmos, there's a horizon. that is, we see ourselves at the center of a sphere because it's a three-dimensional object. But the idea of the cosmic horizon is that because the universe has a finite age and because light travels at a finite speed, you can't see out forever because light has to have time to get to you from these distant places. So although the universe is presumably infinite, although or at least certainly much, much larger than the patch of it that we can see, our local, what we call the observable universe or a horizon, is just how far out you can see within the age of the universe. So for example, if the universe is 14 billion years old, you can only see out about 14 billion light years, the distance that light would travel in that amount of time. And anything further away from that, light hasn't had time to get from there to us in the age of the universe.
Well, you're talking about the observable universe. And I know the Hubble has observed stars that come very close to within a couple hundred million years of the Big Bang. So is it possible, perhaps with the brand new Webb telescope, that would be able to see beyond that, in that, you know, the Big Bang will be recalculated?
Absolutely. So The thing to understand about telescopes is that telescopes really are time machines. Because light travels at a finite speed, when we look out in space, we're also looking back in time. And we think of light as traveling so fast that it's almost instantaneous. We really don't worry about the speed of light in our normal everyday lives. But light actually travels at a really slow pace. So the way I like to put it is that the speed of light is about 30 centimeters per billionth of a second, or about a foot. So a billionth of a second is about how long it takes your cell phone to do one calculation in the chip. And in that amount of time, light only travels about 30 centimeters. And so that when we look out in space, we're looking back in time. When we look at the sun, we see the sun not as it is right this second, but as it was 8 minutes ago, because it takes the light 8 minutes to get to us. When we look out at the nearest large galaxy, the Andromeda galaxy, it takes light 2.5 million years to get to us from there. And so we see it as it was 2.5 million years ago. The Hubble telescope, the most distant objects that Hubble can see, were emitted, the light was given off by those objects when the universe was only about 750 million years old, between 5 and 700 million years. And so that light has been traveling to us all this time and is just now reaching us. The new telescopes, in particular the James Webb, will actually be able to see out further still and further back in time. This is really great because an archaeologist, for example, has to reconstruct the past from indirect evidence, from relics. You dig up bones and you figure out what the animals must have looked like, for example. We cosmologists have it relatively easy, is that we don't have to speculate on what the past looked like. We can actually see it. So if you build a telescope that can see out 10 billion light years, you see the universe as it was 10 billion years ago. So the entire history of the cosmos from the Big Bang to today is spread out in front of us. And the further out we look with our telescopes, the further back in time we see, and the earlier and earlier in the history of the universe that we see. So the Webb telescope, for example, will be able to see far enough back in time that it will actually see the formation of the first galaxies in the universe. It won't quite see far out enough to see the formation of the first stars in the universe when what are called the dark ages ended and the first stars form and lit the universe up with light. But it will see the immediate aftermath of that. And that's a very exciting prospect.
Let's take a break. You're listening to the Science Edition of Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. I'd like to remind you that Press Conference USA is available for free download at our new website, voaafrica.com. You can also find our show on Apple Podcasts and other podcast websites. We hope you'll connect with us on Facebook at VOA Current Affairs or Facebook and Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA. You can also send us an email to pcusa@voanews.com. Now let's get back to the Science Edition of Press Conference USA. I'm Rick Pantaleo. Today we're discussing the mysterious origins of the universe and all it contains. My guest is William Will Kinney, a professor of physics at the University of Buffalo College of Arts and Sciences in Buffalo, New York. Professor Kinney is also the author of a newly released book that explores the origins of the universe called An Infinity of Worlds, Cosmic Inflation, and the Beginning of the Universe. Well, when discussing topics like cosmology, I think it's difficult not to mention the contributions made by the late, great Albert Einstein.
Einstein's theory of gravity, which is called general relativity, is really the GOAT, right? It's the greatest of all time. It has withstood tremendous efforts to falsify it, if you like, so that every time we try to measure something, every time we test Einstein's theory of gravity, it comes out exactly right. That's a really beautiful thing.
One of the things that he tried to reconcile, from what I'm remembering, is the idea of quantum physics with the general theory of relativity. Can you tell us about any role that quantum physics may have played in the creation of the universe?
Well, the unification of gravity and quantum mechanics is one of the foremost outstanding problems in theoretical physics currently. They don't play nicely with each other. They're not, as far as we know, they're not compatible. And coming up with a larger theory that incorporates both of them is something that we still have yet to do. However, getting back to the theory of inflation in particular, this theory of what happened before the Big Bang, quantum mechanics is really essential. Because one of the other things that the standard Big Bang cosmology doesn't explain is where structure in the universe came from. The universe we see today is full of galaxies and planets and stars and people and all of these things, that the universe is clumpy and has all of this very complex structure in it on scales heading out toward hundreds of millions of light years. What we do know about this structure was that it was created by gravity acting on tiny little perturbations in the early universe. So the early universe was almost completely smooth, and it had little regions that were a little bit more dense than their surroundings, and regions that were a little bit less dense, these little fluctuations in the density of the universe that were about one part in 100,000. And we can measure these in various ways. But what the standard cosmology doesn't tell you is where those initial seeds for structure in the universe came from. The theory of inflation answers this with quantum mechanics. In inflation, this is actually a quantum mechanical process that happens in this extraordinarily rapid expansion that happens before the onset of the hot Big Bang. Tiny little quantum fluctuations in the vacuum of space are stretched out to enormous scales. And these echoes that are left behind in the curvature of the space-time itself form the seeds of cosmic structure that forms into everything we see in our universe later. So it's a very elegant unification of gravity and quantum physics that explains the origin of everything we see in the cosmos.
And when we're talking about quantum physics, we're actually talking about subatomic particles. So we're going, instead of going big, we're going very basic parts of elements, very basic physics. In other words, the internal workings of matter.
That's exactly right. And one of the beautiful things about cosmology is that because the physics of what happened in the universe when it was very young is the physics of things at very high energies and very short distances, it provides a point where the physics of inner space, quantum mechanics, and the physics of fundamental particles meets the physics of outer space, cosmology, galaxies, clusters of galaxies, and so on. They actually unify and they meet in a full circle at the first moment of time. And this provides a very, very elegant picture of the origins of the cosmos itself.
I understand one of the ways that scientists could study the Big Bang is through something called a cosmic microwave background, or CMB. What is this? How is it discovered? And how is it captured?
The cosmic microwave background is, simply put, is the light left over from the Big Bang. So the early universe would have been very hot and very dense. And in fact, it would have been like something like a thick fog. You wouldn't be able to see very far through it because the light was scattering so much off this hot, dense gas. As the gas cooled, about 400,000 years after the Big Bang, the universe suddenly went through a transition when it went from being opaque, like a thick fog, to being transparent. Suddenly the fog cleared. And the light that was bouncing around in that hot gas that was, you know, about half the temperature of the surface of the sun would have been freed to propagate throughout space. And that light, this glow left over from the initial hot gas, fills the entire universe. And as the universe expanded, that glow cooled, but it's still there. So what would have been visible to your eye at the time when the light was first emitted, because of the expansion of the universe since then, between when it was 400,000 years old and now at almost 14 billion, the wavelength has stretched, and now it's brightest in the microwaves. This was first discovered in 1965 by Penzias and Wilson, who were two scientists who were working for Bell Labs, and they were experimenting with microwave communications for satellites in the early days of satellite communications. And they actually detected this background noise in their antenna, and they had no idea what it was. And it was David Wilkinson and Robert Dickey at Princeton, who were two cosmologists who were actually looking for this light left over from the Big Bang at the time, immediately recognized what it was, and they were seeing this light. In fact, if you take an old school television, an old analog one, and you tune it off the channel, so what you see is static, about 1% of that static is light left over from the Big Bang itself. And that is what the cosmic microwave background is. And that actually allows us, by looking at that light, we can see what exactly what the universe looked like when it was only about 400,000 years old. We can directly observe it.
Going back to the early history of the universe, after the Big Bang, I understand the universe was bright and hot, and it lasted, I don't know, how long did this period of early universe last, where nothing else existed but this bright, hot space?
The universe gradually cooled. So, for example, the first elements were formed in nuclear reactions that happened between when the universe was between 1 second and 3 minutes old. All of the hydrogen and helium in the universe was formed by an age of about 3 minutes. The universe cooled and became transparent about 400,000 years after the Big Bang. This was when the cosmic microwave background was released. And after that, the universe entered a period called the Dark Ages, where there were no stars, there was no light being emitted, and gradually dark matter was collapsing into halos, pulling the hydrogen and helium gas into those halos along with it, gradually becoming denser and denser until finally, we don't know exactly how long, but somewhere around 200 million years after the Big Bang, the first stars formed and filled the universe with light. And this ended the Dark Ages and entered the age of the stars and the galaxies, which is where we live now.
Speaking of stars, when we're talking about the first stars that ever formed, at the time, you would have to admit there weren't many elements in the universe. There was what, hydrogen, helium, and perhaps another element as well. How did those particular stars happen to form when they didn't have the sophistication of the stars that we're seeing now? In other words, they didn't have the additional elements that current stars produce.
That's right. So all of the things that are heavier than hydrogen and helium in the universe, all the things that make us up, the carbon and the oxygen and the metals and all of these things that make up our bodies, for example, were all produced in stars, in nuclear reactions in the centers of stars. The first stars formed when there were none of these elements in the universe, only hydrogen and helium. So these stars would have been very, very different than modern stars. They would have been much larger, much brighter, and they would have had extremely short lifetimes, perhaps millions or tens of millions of years, no more, compared to the sun, which has a lifetime of almost 10 billion years. So these stars would have been huge, massive, and very short-lived, and they would have exploded very quickly into supernovas, and those explosions would have seeded the gas in the cosmos with the heavier elements that were necessary later to form stars like the ones we see today and also to form life.
So in other words, when a star reaches the end of its lifetime, especially if it's a supermassive star, it ends its life in a supernova, it explodes. And with that explosion, it throws out more sophisticated elements, such as
iron,
gold, and platinum. Have we found evidence of any newer elements that were produced by more recent supernovas?
Well, one of the interesting things is that the elements like gold and platinum, all the precious metals, for example, those were not primarily formed in supernovae. They were formed mostly in mergers of neutron stars. So neutron stars are actually these incredibly dense remnants that are left behind after supernovae occur. And these remnants sometimes orbit in and merge with each other in a cataclysmic merger that gives off, we can see them happening because of the gravitational waves they emit. This is one of the things that the LIGO telescope sees. And it is now known that most of, for example, the gold, and if you have a gold jewelry, almost all of the gold in that jewelry was formed in the mergers of two neutron stars at some distant point in the universe, which I think is really cool.
I don't know if you've seen this or not, Will, but there was a recent study from Princeton University physicists, and they proposed that the rapid expansion of the universe could slow within 65 million years and within 100 million years stop and begin to contract over billions of years until it ends and possibly is reborn again. Your thoughts?
I'm fairly skeptical of this. We have no particular evidence that the expansion of the universe is slowing down. In fact, rather the opposite. All of the evidence indicates that the expansion is speeding up. So this is an idea. It's an interesting idea, but it's a purely hypothetical one. We have no particular actual observational evidence that this is going to occur. Maybe it will. It's impossible to tell for sure.
So do you see the universe actually coming to an end? In other words, it's not an infinite universe. It does have a beginning. It does have an ending.
As far as we know, although the universe had a beginning, and this is well established and uncontroversial, the future of the universe is less well determined. But our best guess, based on what we know the universe is made of now, in particular the dark energy that is dominating the density of the universe, if this dark energy is stable, if it doesn't decay with time or have some sort of other time dependence, the conclusion you draw is that the universe will not come to any kind of an end, but it will expand infinitely. Weirdly enough, that infinite expansion will be so fast that we will ultimately find ourselves, our galaxy, alone in a completely empty space, devoid of any other galaxies. And eventually all the stars in our galaxy, after about 100 trillion years or so, the last stars in our galaxy will go out, and the end state of the universe will be cold, dark, and empty. This is our current best guess, although it's very difficult to predict things hundreds of trillions of years in advance, as you might imagine.
I've been reading that some scientists say that the Big Bang was not only the beginning of our universe, but was the ending of a previous universe, and that there were other universes even before that. Do you buy into that theory?
If you take this theory of inflation, which has, because it creates the structure in the universe that we see today, we can actually test this theory. We can match its predictions for what the structure in the universe ought to look like against what we see. If you then calculate the consequences of this, you come to find that it predicts almost inevitably that our universe is not unique, but it is one of many, many other universes that are continuously being produced out of a larger structure in a process called eternal self-reproduction. So the picture of the universe that you get from inflation at the end of the day is nothing like this little patch of the universe we live in, but that our universe is in fact one of an innumerable number of others that are constantly popping into existence in a much larger and potentially much, much older environment. So the inflationary universe could be unimaginably old and unimaginably vast. And our, what we call our universe, our entire infinite space that we live in, would be one of many, many, many others that are constantly being produced out of empty space itself. So the picture that you get is very different.
You're suggesting a multiverse, in other words.
It's basically an almost inevitable consequence of inflation itself. Yes.
And we were introduced to the concept of multiverse in the movie Interstellar.
Sure. And it's certainly a standard trope of science fiction, you know, Marvel multiverse and all of these things. So it's something that I think fires up people's imagination a lot. The multiverse of inflation, of course, it would be, as far as we know anyway, impossible to travel to these other universes because of the presence of these cosmic horizons that we talked about earlier. We're trapped within our own little horizon. And unless, for example, Einstein's theory of gravity is wrong in some fundamental way or something similar, then these other universes that may or may not be out there would be forever inaccessible to us by any conceivable measurement, observation, or way to travel to them. So it presents a cosmologist like me with an interesting problem in that we're sort of moving beyond the boundary of what you can really legitimately call a scientific hypothesis at all. If you can't ever tell whether or not that those things are out there, is it really science to suggest that they are? That's a difficult question.
Will Kinney, I want to thank you so much for joining us today and explaining some of the theories that have taken place over the years. Thank you so much today for joining
us
today.
Thanks, Rick. It's been a real pleasure.
That was William Will Kinney, a professor of physics at the University at Buffalo College of Arts and Sciences in Buffalo, New York. Professor Kinney is also the author of a newly released book that explores the origins of the universe called An Infinity of Worlds, Cosmic Inflation and the Beginning of the Universe. And that's all the time we have for this science edition of Press Conference USA. I hope you enjoyed today's show. Thanks for listening. This is Rick Pantaleo reminding you to join Carol Castiel next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.